The FBI cracked the iPhone on its own, but what happens now? The trouble with using free platforms like Instagram. And despite the awesomeness of the Oculus Rift, VR might be headed to the trough of disillusionment. All that and a lot more metaphors on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1479, recorded Monday, March 28th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today, the show where we talk about some of the biggest tech news stories with people who love technology. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is on vacation, but my guest today is Scott Johnson from the Frog Pants Network. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, it's good to be back. Thank you for having me back on, Megan. And it's fun to be here, even though the shadow of Jason looms large when he's not around.
I know. It's exhausting when he's not here. He also, I have some crazy ideas of things to talk about sometimes. And he's the one that says, that's too crazy or that's too vague. And, you know, when I'm just left in a room by myself, I don't know what's going to happen today, Scott.
Much deserved time off for Jason. I'm glad he's having a good time. And
yes.
Colorado will surely never be the same.
Exactly. So, Scott, you are, of course, a cartoonist, a podcaster, founder of the fantastic Frog Pants Network. What kind of podcasts do you guys do, if anyone has not heard of you?
Oh, man. We're very gaming-focused, or at least that's how it was in the early days. So for those who have been around me or listening to you for 10 or 12 years, they've heard a lot of gaming podcasts, specifically stuff around Blizzard games like World of Warcraft, Heroes of the Storm, Diablo, that sort of thing. But we've expanded a lot in the last few years, and I just hit our 1,000th episode for our morning show, which we do every day, Monday through Thursday anyway. For an hour and a half, myself and Brian Ibbett co-host that show. And that's more like just the morning show I never had growing up that I wished I had. And so we decided to make one by ourselves and many others about pop culture and movies and you name it. If people go to frogpants.com, they can find it all right there. And it's always a pleasure to hop over here and do a Twitch show with somebody.
Well, awesome. Peter Rubin from Wired is going to come talk to us about the Oculus Rift after we get through with the headlines. I know you're excited to talk about that. So let's get into one of the headlines that just broke this afternoon. Our long national nightmare is over. You no longer have to hear us talking about the case of Apple versus the FBI for now. According to court documents, TechCrunch reports that the FBI has withdrawn its request from Apple since their outside source is apparently able to crack the iPhone themselves. So, yeah, I guess it's all over and we can stop thinking about privacy. Right, Scott?
I'm guessing it is only over in the sense that the urgency of it feels a little bit backed off. But I was less weirded out by the whole scenario than I am now. Because now what I'm hearing is, well, we really need them to do this. It's anti-American for them not to let us get into this phone. It's bad for them not to write a way for us to hack into it. And they're essentially rebelling against the people and the republic. And that's really kind of the claims that we started to hear levied against Apple. And Apple's like, no, this is about privacy. It's about precedence. And it's about, not being compelled to create what is in effect speech for the government to give them what they need. And at that stage, I was like, all right, sounds like the basis of an argument on both sides. And I'm very interested to kind of follow and see what happens. And then it just felt like the FBI was like, never mind. We found this Israeli company. They totally figured it out. It's fine now. Forget about it. It's good. We're all good now. And that weirds me out more, because what that tells me is, well, did you really feel like Apple needed to do something here? Or was this just a sort of pandering to people who are sort of anti-terrorism to get all over Apple's case to get what you needed done? But you don't really feel this way. All you really needed was somebody to be able to hack the thing. And now that you got it from an outside source, That makes me really nervous about who's going to, you know, who can hack and who can't hack certain things. So as far as I'm concerned, it just got weirder and harder and more of a nuanced and complicated conversation than it even was, you know, 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me feel a little more paranoid. I mean, they say they've accessed the data that was on this phone. We don't know if they did for sure. I mean, we just, you know, we tend to trust the government that it's not going to lie. But you wonder why they were, like you were saying, why were they doing this in the first place? And then, you know, it is good news that Apple doesn't have to create this government OS that they were being asked to create that would, we all agree, make us all more insecure. But then what happens next? I mean, you know, next time something like this happens, are they going to ask them to do this again?
Yeah, to me, it's I'm not known for my, I may be known for them, but I'm not known for them being quality. I don't do great metaphors. But I'm going to use one here real quick.
Oh, good.
To me, this was like somebody, a homeowner, being approached and said, hey, we're pretty sure that dog you had that bit the neighbor kid, the reason he did it is he had some crazy, weird dog food in the house. And we need to see where that dog food. So we need to get in your house. And the homeowner says, well, no, you don't. You can't come in here. That's a bad example because you could do a probable cause warrant and get into a house. But anyway, they basically say, you can't get in here. And they said, well, no, we need to. And here's all the reasons why. And they got the community all upset and everybody's having a town meeting and the mayor's getting involved and everybody's freaking out and has an opinion. And they do it during an election year. And then in the end, they just like, never mind. What? You don't need the dog food anymore? No, we're good. I found another neighbor. He's got an answer for us. Like that would just be weird. And I'd want to move out of the neighborhood. So I none of it makes me comfortable. All of it makes me more nervous than I did before. And, you know, like I said before, I don't think the conversation is even close to being over. It is going to get a lot more complicated. I don't think, you know, the nice thing about this argument was, well, here's one side of the argument. Here's the other side. And it felt very court worthy, like a very, I don't know, this felt like a thing that was going to be a case to work on. And it might take years, but you could take case law and you could apply it. And it was going to be a thing you could dissect and disseminate and understand. Now, I think it just gets more muddy and complicated. And I don't even know what Apple, I mean, Apple, I guess, hasn't really done much of a response, but I'd be very curious to see if they ever say anything. If Tim Cook comes out and says, well, despite this, this is still our, you know, this is our stance. We're going to do this and this and this and, you know, see what Apple says to this. But the whole thing just strikes me as a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I do like your crazy dog food metaphor, though. I think that works.
Thanks.
We'll go with that one. All right, let's move on. Today, Pandora announced that founder Tim Westergren has taken the reins as CEO of the company. The stock, which has already been in decline, dropped another 8% at the news. Now, I think that Pandora, I don't think this is good news for Pandora. I mean, I am a Pandora subscriber. I've loved the idea of Pandora since it's been around, I think, since 2000. But they don't seem to have a business model that works. I mean, the more people that subscribe, it's the more expensive it is to run the company. So I don't know. Are you fans of Pandora?
Yeah. I feel like it's not to use another bad metaphor.
Dog food pun? Dog food metaphor?
But in a way, they're great innovators. They're the ones who you heard first about. They're the ones where you said, "Oh, streaming music, that's interesting." And as bandwidth became, better and more widespread, and people could access such things as streaming content, they emerged as, "Whoa, they're really cutting edge, and they're really, you know, doing some amazing, crazy things here." But then, as what typically happens in this case, the innovators often get squished, and it's not always, but most of the time they do. So, you know, the case of the Diamond Rio back in the early 2000s, that seemed like the greatest portable music player man had ever devised. And others tried to compete, but nobody could compare to the Diamond Rio. And then walked Apple with their iPod plans and utterly destroyed it. The same thing happens to all kinds of services and products over time and over the years. And I feel like this is kind of the same. If you ask me in 5-10 years, will Pandora still be in the business of streaming? Will they still be a factor in that market? However it may evolve with all the other issues about, you know, payment rights for the artists and whether or not the labels are still making too much or the deals are too lousy for the labels to make money. And all those questions aside, will they be a part of that conversation? Probably not. They will be the MySpaces of that decade. They will be, you know, the Friendsters of that decade. And who knows, may one day be the Facebooks of that decade, unless Facebook continues to be smart about their choices. It's a very interesting shelf life these technologies or these services or these products tend to have today. and nothing's guaranteed, man. And Pandora just feels like they're on the edge of that. Like, oh, we don't really have a model, and Apple Music and Spotify and everybody else is doing all this stuff. And even RDO got sucked up and sort of pulled into just, was it Spotify bottom, I guess? And, you know, there's no, it's starting to get to that point where you're like, oh man, who's left? Well, Google Play and Amazon, they're behemoths with other revenue sources. How's a little guy to survive? And it doesn't matter how much you innovate. If you can't take that innovation and just get right over the next hump, you're kind of shot. It almost happened to Apple. You know, they fired their founder and they just about lost it in the early 90s. And they had to crawl back from that. So I think it's, I don't know, it's a hard lesson to learn, apparently, because everybody keeps doing it. Bottom line is, though, I don't know that Pandora will be a factor in the next few years when it comes to streaming music. And I'm a little sad about it.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that they think Tim Westergren is like a Steve Jobs comeback to take the company, you know, back to where it needs to be? Is that, because it doesn't seem like stockholder. Yeah.
They all, when they do this, like Yahoo hires Marissa Meyer and thinks, mm-hmm. well, that's it. We've done it. We've gotten one of Google's brightest and best. And I mean, who knows what the heck Yahoo's going to be in the, speaking of the next 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, they've been through some real turmoil lately. And it's not, I'm not laying the blame at her feet. Sometimes it's just not a salvageable situation. Sometimes a CEO is brought in to save the company, and sometimes they're brought in to get by. Sometimes they think they're going to save it, but they don't. Sometimes they contribute to the downfall of the company. Who knows about whether Westergren's that or the other, but I have a feeling that I just feel like the genie's out of the bottle. Unless somebody turns that around and says, oh my gosh, we just thought of the best way to position Pandora finally. What could that possibly be in the shadow and face of all these other services that seem to have hit their stride? Or at the very least, are companies so big in other ways, Spotify being the exception, I guess, that they can cover, this can be a loss leader and they can cover their losses on it. And they can fight with the industry and they can fight with these record labels trying to keep their deals low and them trying to get their deals higher and have all that stuff play out, but not have it really affect their bottom line because it's not their core business. I don't know how you compete with that when you are literally Pandora and your business is literally a free streaming service that you can sign up for to get rid of commercials. That is a hard call.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that this happens a lot, like you're saying, but I mean, I remember Tim Westergren, like in the early 2000, like we were all standing behind him. Like he was really like a David and Goliath situation. And then I feel like, as long as we're making metaphors, these other, you know, Goliaths, you know, that were bigger than the Goliath, the record company Goliath, just stepped on and pushed him aside. And it's sad.
It is sad. I don't know. I mean, if they can pull it out and he can come back in a Steve Jobs way and do amazing things, that would be great. I just feel like it's so far down the road. It's like, you know, when Napster tried to become a legitimate music service.
Right.
Well, what happened to that? Like, nobody cares. And I hate that nobody cares because that seemed like the pirate underground guerrilla thing, man. It's like Napster sticking it to the man. And now they're going legit, so now we can all get behind them. Well, that didn't really work either. So I don't know. It's a fickle business, man. Like, somebody should ask Tom from MySpace. Probably have, actually. There's probably plenty of interviews. But, you know, ask those guys what that must have been like to be at the height of the category and then just have it ripped away from them by competition. And that's really what's happening to Pandora. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but I just don't think it's... The writing feels like it's on the wall. Maybe there's a transition here. Maybe there's a way to make them an attractive offer to somebody else. Somebody else may want to buy that. I don't know what infrastructure's in place or what's in place in terms of what they have that others don't that would make them purchasable for a decent sum, but that's an option. It worked for RDO. It could work for them. You know, Spotify's strategy may be just that. Let's suck up everyone else and buy them and own them, and then, you know, we dominate basically the entire independent space and then let that fight the behemoths that are out there like Apple and, you know, Google and Amazon and whoever else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the other option is you can do like Instagram did and get bought by Facebook and then become more like Facebook and have people get really angry at you about it. That's the news today. Instagrammers who are making money by pushing brands on Instagram are totally freaking out today and demanding that you sign up for notifications to get notified every time they post something on Instagram. Instagram, of course, announced March 15th that it plans to, at some point, adjust feeds with an algorithm so you don't just see every post in order. People do not like the change because people don't like change. But Scott, what do you think about this?
Oh man, it's such a tricky thing because as a content creator who's always trying to figure out what an angle would be to maximize growth, bigger audience, find the right niches, all that sort of stuff. Now, these days, it depends on so many other sources of those niches, and social media in all of its forms are kind of where that stuff is at. And the problem is Instagram very quickly became a great platform for popular Instagrammers to start hawking product for people who wanted to push products through them. And they've done pretty well. Vine's another good example of this. The top Viners all have advertising deals that net some of them a great deal of money yearly. And they do really well. They've basically been able to build a business on top of that platform. But this is the problem with platforms like this, especially ones that are free platforms, where you really don't have to invest at all in your placement on Instagram other than be popular for whatever reason you're popular, get a huge following, and then attract advertisers. That's your sole job. You didn't have to build Instagram. You didn't have to do anything to contribute to Instagram other than you are a popular draw on Instagram. When that service in the service of its own service needs to change something up or switch something around, it sucks for the guys who have all based their business or their income or their livelihood on this. And it's no different for people on Twitch or YouTube or anything else. The minute the platform holder changes something, it affects everybody. It's a really weird thing if you think about it, because I'm trying to think of a real world example of this. I guess it would be like if we had a mall. Here's more metaphors. You ready? We got a mall and Megan and I both have stores in there. You've got some rad store, sell some kind of cool stuff. And I've got some comic book store down the way. And there's a food court and we have friends who own those restaurants or whatever, those food court places. And we're all doing well and everything's going great. And the mall comes in and says, all right, guys, sorry, this is kind of late notice, but we've decided that we're going to have everybody travel underground as they go to each of the mall stores. And that means that you're only going to get 25% of the traffic you used to get. But it's better for the mall. It's faster to get end-to-end. That's just the way it has to be. Well, we're going to be mad because that's our platform. The difference is we're paying for that platform, and Instagrammers are not paying for that. So maybe this is an opportunity for Instagram to say, all right, fine, you don't like the way the algorithm works. Pony up some, I don't know, percentage of whatever you're getting for ads, and you can help pay for the platform and therefore skip the algorithm. You'll still be in, the top results of your followers or something to that degree. Because right now, it's just people complaining that the free platform that they got all famous on is making changes. And that's a weird thing that we don't really have a good analog for in the brick and mortar world.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a lot to do with what we value in audiences. And I think you and I both work in a world where we want an audience that is really interested in what we're talking about, and we're never going to have like billions and billions of people watching or listening to us. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But we like the audience that we have that is engaged, and it's smaller. But when we're talking about like the Kardashians or something like that, that is different. Like they just want as many people, and they're not really creating something. I mean, just to go back to your metaphor, like say you have a store with your art in it and next door is like a Kardashian who is just there selling someone else's stuff. That's what it is. It's like some of us have like something that we're creating and other people have just... because people like to follow them on Instagram. And so, it's fascinating because I think what I want to say is like, if your content's good, the algorithm is going to show you to the people that you need to be shown to. I mean, that's what the algorithm wants people to come back. So they're mm-hmm. going to, just like Facebook wants to show us what we want to see mostly. Am I missing something here?
Well, the trick is convincing those popular Instagrammers that their new algorithms are going to actually serve them that way. Because telling them that and actually showing them that are both actually hard. You're not really sure what any users are seeing. You will see how many views, because videos are now tracked by views, not likes. Or likes are still there, but the main number is views on Instagram. I don't remember when that changed, but it was recent. So if you've got a video there, you're going to see how many views. And you might be able to say, oh, well, before you made this change, I was getting 200,000 views of that video. Now an average video is only getting 50,000. Something obviously changed. I'm not showing up in their results. So maybe it has to happen first and they can kind of whittle it down from there. I just don't think they trust them. Mm-hmm. And it's such a weird irony. It's the platform you want. You want to be there. You need to be there. This is where your bread and butter is. But you don't trust the platform. You're mad because they're changing things. It is a very unusual relationship. And I'm not sure I'm not sure. I mean, it must, there must be some equal in the real world. There must be some, like, we all have to take our ships to a certain port back when we were, you know, sending spices around the world, and we all have to share the same port, but four different companies control the shipping lanes, and yet we still have to use the same port. It's like airports, maybe. I don't know. The airports have Delta and everybody, American Airlines, everybody's coming to that hub, and they've got to get passengers on and off, and they've got to have, you know, facilities there to do things. But the airport could make a giant change and tick off all the airlines, I suppose. But again, they're paying to be these places. Instagram is a weird thing, and content creators are in a weird place. So I would be upset if tomorrow Apple announced that iTunes podcasting directories were only going to accept, you know, NPR podcasts in their top lists. Well, that would be a problem, because I'm often up high in the top 10 of our video game categories, and that would mean I get pushed out of there in favor of something from somewhere else. So that's not a service I pay for. They're the biggest podcast directory in the world. They're very influential in terms of that. Huge growth in the business since 2006 when they introduced it. So to change that would really fry me, but it would be the same as what these Instagram people are complaining about. They can't control the platform, so they feel vulnerable. And when change happens, they freak out, even if you're right. And in the end, the algorithm favors them because they're putting up good content.
Well, I guess we'll see, because Instagram has said they're not doing it anytime soon, but I think they will eventually do it. They're just trying to calm everyone down for now. Facebook has apologized for misdirecting safety checks. They were sent to random users after the Easter Sunday bombing that killed 70 people in Lahore, Pakistan. Facebook prompted users in London, New York, Washington, D.C., and other places to let their friends and family know that they were safe. Since Facebook somehow assumed that they were in the area, Facebook blames the mistake on a bug. So I guess this is not a good example of Facebook's algorithm working in this instance.
Well, and not only that, it's just another sign that we... These companies are no longer just companies with a, you know, place to like what your friend said. This is a real service that they do. And they do it not because they're made to or because laws require them to, but because they have enough reach and enough connectivity that if they didn't do it, they'd be doing a real disservice to really humanity. So it's a really cool thing that they do, but they're going to get criticized because they had a bug, which sometimes there are bugs. And in this case, it had a real world effect in a very serious way. And it's such a new relationship. Like, just generally speaking, today's whole episode here seems to have this theme. We are talking about a whole, even VR when we get to it, we have a whole new relationship with the way the world works. And when it comes to the digital world and the connected world, they don't have to do this. They could just pull out and say, we're not doing the notifications anymore. They'd have a giant backlash and a bunch of people would quit Facebook, and it could have a real sizable financial impact on the company. So now they kind of have to do it, but they're not getting paid to do that. Like, it's just such a weird, do you know what I mean? Like, it's just feels like everybody's in just a different position than we're usually in. And it's still, we still have all those natural inclinations to want to place blame and find out who messed up and all of that. But, you know, it's just less, it's less and less about who you're paying. And it's more and more about who has, like, the intellectual currency that you need. And right now, Facebook and others, Twitter, they're important when things like this happen. And when they go down, you could argue lives are at stake when they go down. It's not just, I won't find out what the score to the game was, or I can't see what dumb thing my mom posted. That's no longer it. So it's fascinating to me how we're heading into that.
So what you're saying is, with great power comes much responsibility?
That's exactly what I'm saying. If we've anything from Spider-Man, it's that. And then also that my mom posts really dumb things on Facebook.
Okay, good to know. I like that. Maybe I'll see if she'll friend me on Facebook. So after the break, we are finally going to talk about the Oculus Rift. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. With advancements in technology, we have smart cars, smartphones, smart homes. But losing your possessions can make you feel a little less than smart. Now, every single time I criticize my kids about leaving their backpacks or their band instruments or their sweatshirts somewhere, that's usually about 5 minutes before I realize that I have left my own purse or my laptop or a sweatshirt somewhere. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. It's a coin-sized device that locates misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers, even pets in seconds. Pair Tracker to your iOS or your Android device, attach it to anything via key loop or adhesive, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. It is that easy. You lose your phone, press the button on the tracker, and your phone rings even when it's on silent. The tracker Bravo is constructed with beautiful anodized aluminum for the thinnest and most durable tracking. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away. If an item goes missing, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. When another user of the Tracker app comes within a 100-foot range of your lost item, you will receive a GPS update of where your item is. Never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's TheTracker.com. Promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order. So the Oculus Rift started shipping today. The earliest reviews are in. Scott is still waiting for his, and I know he's been super excited about it for a long time. Today we invited Peter Rubin from Wired, who posted his review this morning. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you have a great long review, so I'm going to ask you a hard question. As a long-form writer, can you describe your experience in just a few words?
Just a few words on launch day. That's a tall order. Let's say I found myself in the virtual reality I've been waiting 3 years for. How's that?
That's good. That's good. So was it, let's start with like comfort. Was it comfortable?
Very comfortable. I mean, that's some of the best work that they've been doing is on the ergonomic side. You know, certainly externally, visually, it has this design language that's been refined over the years. But the most notable thing about it, and even the thing that puts it a little bit ahead of the other two consumer units that are coming later this year, it's just comfortable. The weight management is absolutely, I don't want to say flawless because I'm sure there's some room for improvement, but the way that the weight is counterbalanced and the way that it's dialed in, once you have the fit right, you can kind of take it off and put it back on and you don't have to futz with the Velcro straps and all the other things. So it's really a nice, pleasant, comfortable. There's no weight on your nose. Any of the things that have been issues with headsets in the past, they seem to have solved.
Can you give me a quick up or down on the audio quality of the headphones that are included or a part of the integrated device? Because that was a big concern for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Moving ahead, audio being a big part of sort of positional presence. Like, am I really in this world? Well, it helps to feel like I'm there auditorily anyway. How did that all pan out?
Well, you got kind of two dimensions to that, two things that they needed to solve. One is to get the 3D, the spatialized audio right, and they had licensed it from a company that had cracked this really well. And so as far as the direction and distance of the source of the sound, it's dead on. And there are little on-ear headphones, you could see in that little snippet of the review video that we made. And they don't look like much. And that's why when it was first announced last year, maybe a year and a half ago, that this was going to be on the device, people kind of poo-pooed it. But as a lot of audiophiles know, on-ear headphones are maybe the best of the three. You've got in-ear, over-ear, and on-ear. And so it allows for the sound to go in without completely blocking out your surroundings, which, of course, is necessary when your eyesight is taken up by something that isn't the real world. But the sound quality is kind of phenomenal. I've seen other reviews complaining about sound leaking out. I actually haven't experienced that. I was putting this thing through the paces at my house, and every so often if I'd be doing something loud, I'd ask my wife if she could hear what I was doing. And she always said no, though that was probably just being relieved that I wasn't yammering in her ear.
So were there, what things surprised you? I presume that you've used previous versions like at conferences and such. Was there anything that surprised you in the real thing?
The thing that surprised me probably with this one is that the tracking is 360 degrees, meaning you could spin in an entire circle and it wouldn't lose track of where your headset is in space. The positional tracking is such a key element of the immersion and of enabling presence, and I'll take my hands out of frame now, but really it needs to be able to track you as you move. And in earlier versions, if I would turn all the way around, sometimes it wouldn't get a good read on where my headset was. They still have the infrared LEDs in virtually the same place that they were on earlier versions, but for whatever reason, I have found it just about impossible to break the positional tracking, unless my cat was sitting in front of the infrared sensor, which he delights in doing. Other than that, it's been pretty well spot on.
So it ships with a Xbox One controller, which is nice because they give us a decent, you know, input device until their touch controllers are sort of finalized, and we don't know what those are going to cost yet and all of that. But from the gaming perspective, which is a huge way that this is being positioned at launch, 30 launch titles, all of which are essentially games. Some are more experiential, but for the most part, these are a lot of games. Two pack-ins, for example, that come free for pre-orders, Eve Valkyrie and Lucky's Tale. Your experience in those environments, did you come away going, yeah, gamers are going to be excited about this, you know, more, even more so than those who are just looking for, you know, a chance to explore virtual worlds, but actual gamers?
I think so. I mean, they picked the two launch titles that they picked to pack in are the two that have been in the works for the longest and also have been maybe are maybe the most polished. And they really represent kind of a pretty broad swath of the continuum of games. On one hand, you have this kind of hardcore space aerial dogfight shooter in Eve Valkyrie. And it's wonderful. We, you know, some other journalists and I were trying to kind of form squads over the past week and take advantage of the mic that's built into the headset and really try to do voice communications. And I wasn't able to get into a squad, and I'm not sure who was. Some of us were having some issues. A lot of that is the usual pre-launch wrinkles. But then on the other side, you have Lucky's Tale, which is this kind of cartoonish, a little bit of Mario, a little bit of Ratchet and Clank, this kind of really cartoonish platformer that's a lot of fun. So those really kind of nicely represent the two poles of gaming. But in between, I was surprised to find some little gems in there. There's one called Vectron Revenge that's essentially a Geometry Wars style shoot 'em up, except it's there's no controller. You only use your head, and you're in this kind of incredible geometric 360-degree space. And it feels, as soon as you start, like you are going to get sick immediately, but it just doesn't happen. It's a very stable, very comfortable game. But even beyond the, I think there are 30 games that are available on launch day. The most interesting thing about this is the best games that I've seen beyond Lucky's Tale and arguably Eve Valkyrie are the ones that aren't here yet. So there's a long road here, and there's a big upside for Oculus. When they do launch the Oculus Touch handheld controllers, the games that come for that are going to be some of the best that I and some other people who have been following this for years have seen. It's fantastic contraption. It's I Expect You to Die. It's Eagle Flight, which was shown for the first time a couple of weeks ago, which is you as an eagle flying over Paris and getting into 3-on-3 bird fights. It's some of these games that aren't around yet are the ones to really look forward to, which is not to say that it's an anemic launch slate. It's certainly not. But I would say that there are maybe a third of that is standout titles and really worth your money. And the price on these games, you know, it goes everywhere from about $10 up to a full $60. Project Cars, which is a really fully drawn racing sim, is a full $60 like any console AAA title would be. And while I haven't gotten far enough into it to say that it justifies that price, it's certainly enough content to justify that price.
So how long, like in minutes, were you able to use it? How much time did you spend? I mean, at a time, like did you, like 15 minutes longer?
Oh, an hour easily. You know, I had one moment of pronounced discomfort, and it was from one of the games that was rated the lowest tier. It was rated the most comfortable, but for whatever reason, I was whipping my head back and forth. I was getting a little vehement playing air hockey against an alien, and I just eaten, and it just wasn't. It wasn't a great sensation. But beyond that, you know, these are the puzzles that the team at Oculus and teams at every VR hardware company have been working on for a very long time now. So we know that latency is down well under that kind of magical 20 millisecond threshold. And the display technology has been such that image smear has basically been eliminated. There are very few things to get in the way of your brain and your visual system and your balance system getting along. It takes a lot for that to be interrupted. So what also helps is that I've been using VR for various durations for a long time now. So certainly there's, you know, it's like you have your sea legs for VR. So for people who've never used it before, A desktop system is certainly the most stable place to start. You give someone Google Cardboard and tell them to go nuts, a few minutes later, they may be looking at you a little green. but you give someone the stability of something with all the bells and whistles that the Rift has or the Vive has or PlayStation VR will have when it comes out later this year, and there's a baseline level of comfort that's just harder to get away from.
It's interesting. Do you, you mentioned briefly, you know, the most stable position or the most stable platform is probably going to be the higher end and on a PC. One nice thing about this, when it ships and is arriving now and will be for the next, you know, however long these pre-orders take to get to people, like 30 days for me, they look like a complete product. In fact, you mentioned in your review, it's a little, you know, very Apple packaging, very almost misleading. Like this is some sort of luxury device and that all is there for you to do. But it's always kind of evident to most of us that, oh, yeah, I need a $1,500 plus PC to run this thing. And a lot of people aren't really set up for that. How much do you think that's going to work against this or the Vive or any other device that requires more than, say, a PlayStation 4 or, in the case of, you know, Gear VR, a phone?
You know, it's a great question. And that's the kind of thing we're going to need more than a year to see. You know, the in the much talked about hype cycle, we are going probably pretty quickly into the what's known as the trough of disillusionment, which means that whether people don't want to buy in for a $1,000 PC rig that'll run this thing, or they try it at a friend's house and they don't see the holodeck from Star Trek Next Generation and they write it off, over the next year you're going to see a lot of people trying it, but it's also not going to become ubiquitous the way we have a feeling it will become. It's not going to take a year. It's going to take 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. As far as this first generation, the obstacle that needing to buy a full PC presents, it's impossible for us to know. You know, certainly this is something that Oculus and HTC and Valve and Facebook, by extension of their acquisition of Oculus, these are all things they're aware of and are prepared for. And I would imagine that their projected figures take that into account. So what is considered to be success for them is not going to be success on the level of the iPhone 4 or thereafter. We remember the first iPhone when you bought it and there wasn't even really an app store. You know, when you put the Rift's first generation next to the first iPhone, it is a more polished product. There is a fuller slate of things you can do. It has been refined and refined and refined and refined. And so what you need to do is extrapolate out this idea that it's going to take successive iterations to turn this thing into the thing that everybody has in their home. Certainly as years go by and the power of the PC that's needed now becomes offloaded into increasingly more powerful smartphones, this will in time become a standalone device. This is a refined product, but it's also a refined product that's as advanced as it could possibly be in 2016, which is not yet at the level of sci-fi.
Sure.
So I'm guessing that you would recommend this to mostly people who have probably already placed orders for it at this point. Would you recommend it to anyone else?
I would, though. You know, keep in mind, if you order one today, it's not going to get to your house until July. So what you have to look forward to towards the end of this year, I think, is the thing that's going to turn it from an excited early adopter thing into more of a maybe extravagant gift idea or a thing to save up for the general consumer. You're still going to need that PC, but what you're going to have is the Oculus Touch controllers that bring your hands into it. And you're going to have an increasingly kind of robust slate of things you can do. Sorry, banging my laptop around. I get so excited talking about this stuff. So I think what you're going to see in the third and fourth quarters of 2016, once the touch controllers come out, you're going to see a bigger retail push. And I think coming up on the holiday, it's going to go from this thing that you've heard about maybe because tech sites are writing about it or it's on the news to a thing you're seeing TV commercials for, much like you are now with the Gear VR. What's different is the Gear VR to the Rift is like going from a flip phone to a smartphone. And I think as more and more people get to use this, thanks to their friends who are early adopters or it being at installations and at kiosks at various things, Comic-Con, South By, things like that, word of mouth is a powerful thing, and word of mouth has benefited VR hugely in the past 3 years. The reason that Oculus has been so transparent about the development process, and Valve even has been transparent about their development process with the Vive in a way that Valve historically has never been, is because they know that to use it is to want it, and to use it is to evangelize for it, and you become the best marketer that they could have.
And they don't want another format war. They don't want a console-style format war. At least that's my impression at this stage. This may change when, you know, it starts to become more and more important for Valve to prop up and maintain whatever they do with the Steam Store and Steam VR. And as Oculus, you know, fleshes out their store, which is, by all accounts today, running really well and doing what it needs to do, maybe business gets in the way. But as it stands right now, there is a very hippie-like sort of, hey, we're all in this together sort of attitude about the technologies, about developers being able to develop for multiple platforms. And this latest news that Sony may consider bringing PSVR to PCs, which is a weird roundabout way of saying, you know, we want this in front of as many people as possible. I really like that. It may boil down to another console-style war. I hope it doesn't, because format wars are the worst, and I hate them. But I also like the competition and what it breeds. So I guess we'll see. This one just feels differently to me. Do you get that sense as well, that this isn't like a normal hardware launch in a lot of those respects?
I got to tell you, I think there are some cracks showing in the kumbaya that we've enjoyed up until now. And the reason I say that is because Steam VR has announced that they're going to support the Rift. But at this point, while you can do things in the Rift that aren't directly through the Oculus Store, you do need to kind of go into some hidden preferences and enable those to happen. It's kind of like a Mac doesn't want you to download something that's not from the App Store. So, you know, Tim Sweeney at Epic Games tweeted earlier today how disappointed he was with Oculus taking what increasingly looks like a very walled garden approach to things. You know, from their perspective, they're doing this to create them, to give their consumers the most stable, comfortable experiences possible. But if Valve is opening up Steam VR in a way that lets you use a Rift to play the games on it, then arguably they're being more open about it than Oculus is. I think that up until now, there's been this rising tide lifts all boats approach, right? We're all on the same team. We all want to get VR to the masses. But as the delivery systems become a little more proprietary, I don't think it's going to be format so much as it is ecosystem, if that makes sense. It's going to be, you know, I think we're looking right now, and this may change, but so far, Steam/Valve/the HTC Vive is looking a little bit more like Google Play, and Oculus is looking a little bit more like iOS.
Which one's looking like Betamax and which one's looking like VHS?
Thankfully, I don't think we have that to worry about.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Peter. Peter Rubin wrote this piece up at Wired. Where's the best place to follow all your work, Peter?
Definitely at Wired.com. We run everything that I've written either in the magazine or on the website. You can always also find me on Twitter. I think that's down here somewhere, if I did that right.
Yes, at Proven Self, right?
At Proven Self on Twitter and at Wired.com for everything else.
Well, thank you so much. Definitely check out his piece and watch the video. It's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, Peter.
Thanks for having me on. Had a great time.
Take care. All right. Well, now we have an email from a viewer that I hope you'll help me out on, Scott. Dan from Chandler, Arizona wrote, regarding the Raspberry Pi powered drone disabler, that was a gun that disabled this drone that we showed on the show last week. I wonder if anyone realizes the gun is a violation against FCC rules regarding intentional interference. And it is a big deal. The FCC takes interference seriously, specifically 95.212C on what communications are prohibited. You must not use an RC station to intentionally interfere with another's station's transmission. So this was a cyber gun. I don't know if you saw this, Scott, but it took advantage of the weakness in the drone. And I guess it is a violation of the FCC. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, so I saw the video and had done a little bit of reading about it. Man, talk about another area where we haven't quite figured out what we're going to do. Drones have so quickly become this phenomenon that, I mean, let's just go back, I don't know, what, 5-7 years ago. We weren't even talking about it. It wasn't even an option. It was the thing of sci-fi. And now everyone's got these quadcopter drones, for some of them for, you know, as much as $3,000, but very inexpensive for what they actually do. Filmmakers are using them. Farmers are using them. Search and rescue teams are using them. Like, they're an incredible device and an incredible technology. But we still haven't wrapped our head around how we want to make sure we're not slamming them into each other or landing them in the, you know, while you're trying to sunbathe, have it land on grandma or whatever. Like, we can't fix everything and make sure every possible accident doesn't happen. But it does seem a little dubious that there is a way to get a Raspberry Pi and quickly program a way to shoot one out of the sky. Because that isn't just simply that drone being disabled. That's that drone being disabled over where other people may live or be walking or whatever. Like, there's danger in every aspect of this. So my feeling is it's going to end up being like cars in a way. I've always said, if you could come from the past to today and just, or let's say it this way, let's say it's still 2016, but car technology has never existed. We've been on horses this whole time. And if suddenly I handed you the keys to a brand new Ferrari, you would think it was the craziest idea anyone had ever had. It would look like the most dangerous possible thing you could do with yourself, with a machine like that on a road anywhere. It would seem insane to us, but we slowly worked our way up to it. From Model Ts to where we are today, and we're okay flying down the freeway at 75 miles an hour with a whole bunch of other people around us, and we have accidents, we have problems, sometimes catastrophic ones, but we kind of accept it, and there are certain laws that govern that to be relatively the norm for most people. Well, drones are going to go through the same process, and I don't know how soon it's going to happen, but we're going to get to a point where some are going to say we need to ban them outright and the public should never have them. And then some are going to say, no, this is a fundamental right that we should be able to be in the airspace that is not interfering with, you know, commercial aircraft or military aircraft. And there's going to be people in the middle who want to figure out a way to solve it. But I think we're probably years away from figuring that out. And we're a whole bunch of really bad Huffington Post front page stories away from that still.
All right. One other addendum to this story. We showed a slightly altered version of the video. I'm not sure if we gave proper credit to the creator of this image when we showed this last week. It had some pew, pew, pew and some lasers in there. And that was Chris at Shifts and Giggle. So thank you, Chris, for photoshopping that video. After the break, it's TNT's Fan of the Day. Plus, Louis C.K. throws some shade at internet news. But first, let's take a minute to thank FreshBooks, the sponsor of this episode. If you are a freelancer or a small business and you're feeling stressed out by stacks of receipts, spreadsheet formatting nightmares, and not enough time to deal with it all, we've got the solution that you have been looking for. It's FreshBooks. Our friends at FreshBooks have created ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software that makes dealing with your taxes way less taxing. Getting started on FreshBooks could not be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. You can create and send invoices efficiently, plus get paid online quickly with FreshBooks payments. You also have the option to request a deposit in FreshBooks and get paid upfront. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. And they've made it incredibly easy for you to track your billable time. FreshBooks recently announced their new EMV chip card enabled card reader. Now you can easily accept credit cards wherever business takes you, quickly and securely with their entirely redesigned iPhone app. Plus, create beautiful invoices in just seconds. With FreshBooks, you can focus on what you love most, growing your business. You will wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. Getting started is simple, and it's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TNT, and don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today. And our TNT fan of the day is Rob from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He writes, I love watching your show on my walking desk. Thanks for the great daily content. Scott, he's showing you, so I guess this was a while ago because that wasn't from today. That was from the first time he came on, but he walked and watched you and I'm sure appreciated all of your metaphors as I do.
I hope. Maybe he was running from them now that I think about it.
He's running towards it. He's running towards you.
All right.
You can show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Okay. In a recent newsletter, comedian Louis C.K., who I am a fan of, he says, internet news is heroin. And I don't think he meant this as a compliment. He says it's too fast and usually wrong. And I guess we're all junkies. He's not talking about specifically tech news, but I thought we could have a little discussion about this. What do you think, Scott?
Well, it's true. I think I completely agree with him. I do. I really do. And I have this problem. Like, I'll see an article and go, oh my gosh, did you hear SoundCloud's closing down, or so-and-so just found a bug in an Android phone and it's going to blow up the world or whatever. There's always these like shocking headlines, and tech news is no stranger to this. And I usually have to get in touch with friends of mine, like Tom Merritt's great at this. He'll say, Scott, calm down. It's like total link bait. Here's this other article that like debunks that, or here's what the real story is. And it's usually vastly different and much more rational than the one I was looking at. The difference I would say is it's not so much that we're addicted to it. It's that a lot of people don't know the difference, because how do you know? It's a headline. It's on a website you think is reputable. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So drugs are a thing I tried once at a party and went, yeah, and I want more of it. This is a thing I can be shown that I'm wrong, and I'm not addicted to it. I don't want any more of it. So I think that the drug references is interesting, except for the addiction part, because I'm definitely not addicted to bad headlines, but they are sometimes easy to get under your skin, like a needle from a heroin syringe.
I know, this is metaphors just keep coming. I think I'm a little addicted. Like, not, I mean, I know the headlines you're talking about that, you know, are clearly wrong, you know, link bait and that sort of thing. But just knowing what the next big thing is going to be and knowing it before anyone else is, like, I think that's a little bit addicting.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, when it comes to, I love video game coverage, and all this stuff about VR has been very interesting. So my news feeds are full of headlines like Oculus Rift exceeds expectations. Which is, you know, maybe one reviewer's opinion and maybe a bunch of others are feeling average about it, but I'm zeroing in on that because that's my drug of choice, is the positive review, because I bought one, so I got buyer's bias going on. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that factor into this psychologically. And yeah, we want it. Like, you know, when E3 rolls around, I'm going to be eating that up as if somebody was feeding me the best pudding I ever had, and I'll just be gulping it down. But at the end of the day, I'd like to think that we're capable of a little more of a discerning eye. So I'm trying to be a little bit more that way. The obvious ones are easy. It's like, you know, Susan Sarandon said this, and you won't believe what happened next. I will never click one of those ever in the history of ever. There's a structure I recognize, and I know that's the bad heroine in the wrong side of town. But, you know, once in a while, it's okay. I love these metaphors. It's okay, you know, to be interested in what you're interested in and maybe get a little led astray or be a little overhyped on the thing that you really like. And, but at the end of the day, just, you know, we all need to be just a little bit more, I don't know, skeptical is maybe one word for it, and we'll be better off.
Yeah, the thing I most loved about this piece, this newsletter that he sent out, which then really got headlines everywhere that were just like, Louis C.K. says news is heroin. I mean, it was exactly what he was saying was just displayed for him. Like
he
said.
I have a feeling he knew that might be the result, that it's a way to test his hypothesis that his actual comment would be taken this way. And there it is. Like, we just did the thing he says we're not doing, or that others would say we're not doing. And it's the same with anything. Anytime, you know, Kanye West tweets something, it doesn't mean it's great. It's breaking news. It just means he tweeted something. We don't need to fill blogs with that stuff. But all this boils down to a very competitive reporting environment where everybody wants your eyeballs. We've never seen anything quite like this. So we either have to embrace it or ignore it, because it's not going away.
Well, I like to think that we slowed it down a little bit in the last hour. Scott, you and I, with crazy dog food metaphors, troughs of disillusionment, and other places we went.
Nothing a dog likes more than a trough full of disillusionment.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We already talked about Frog Pants Network. If anyone wants to see your cartooning work, which is amazing, we already decided you're going to start the new Scott Moji to take on Bitmoji and create our Scott Mojis in the likeness of all of us. What's the best place to find everything that you're doing online?
Well, you can find specifically, I do a webcomic that I've done for the last 14 years, and that's available at myextralife.com. It's really my first foray into internet content creation, and still a thing I love doing. I just put one up today about VR at myextralife.com, which goes into the idea that VR is not nearly as easy to manage as we think it is. It's called Virtual Reality Reality. What's up on screen now? Anyway, you might enjoy that. If you do, there's a book version of my comics, kind of a compilation, and lots of other cool stuff there. So myextralife.com. And for everything else, just find me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson, all one word.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks so much.
All right, tomorrow's guests will be ONJJ Stone, a.k.a. O'Docta, and Matthew Ingram from Fortune, who is not a doctor, as far as I know. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can watch it as it happens. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe to our newsletter at twit.tv/newsletter. I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney. Thank you to Anthony, our technical director, and all of the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for sticking around till the bitter end. We will see you tomorrow.